Now we both kinda like it. Now we both kinda know that if we're ever gonna make it, we just need to let go.
You're listening to the Crosscutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on October 4th, 2016. My guest today is a Microsoft MVP and principal consultant with Trailhead Technology Partners, Jay Tower. How are you?
I'm doing great, Matt. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for being on the show. Now, let's talk about .NET Core today. This is a broad topic, I'd say, so we're just going to scratch the surface. What is .NET Core in relation to the .NET that was, you know, first released back in 2002?
So in the sort of summary version, .NET Core is the cross-platform, open-source version of the .NET framework. So, you know, you've been doing this for a long time, I know. You know, since the beginning, the longer version of that answer is that .NET, the promise of it has been a cross-platform, you know, write code in C# or VB.NET, if you're into that, you know, write it once and it'll work across platforms. You may remember early on that this actually came out to kind of compete with Java and the Java virtual machine concept. And it seemed like for the first few years there that that cross-platform promise was always just around the corner, but never really happened. Microsoft went through a different era where it was all about selling Windows boxes, right? And so that kind of just never really happened. And today it's actually happening, which is really exciting to me. You can now run .NET applications on lots of different operating systems, Mac, Linux, and then, of course, Windows.
I mean, you've kind of answered this already, but why would I want to use .NET Core? Why would I want to switch to this instead of using .NET that I'm using right now?
Right. So the big story there about .NET Core is cross-platform. But what I didn't mention is in addition to deployment, you can do cross-platform development. So, you know, all us cool kids have the MacBook Pros, right? And we like to develop on there with all our open source tools and the bash command line, which we now have the bash command line in Windows.
Yeah, that's right.
All us cool kids with the MacBooks. Now there's a story for us where we can actually develop .NET applications and ASP.NET applications right there in macOS. Or if you're really pushing the envelope, you know, in a Linux, like an Ubuntu flavor of Linux or something like that, if you're really adventurous.
I have a Mac, but I run Windows on it, so.
Yep, yeah, I do the same thing.
So can we clear up some naming things? Microsoft has been accused of being bad at naming, and I think that's probably a fair criticism. Mm-hmm. Oh, what do we call the, I guess I could say, old .NET? Is there an official name for it now?
It's still being just called the .NET framework, and then .NET Core is kind of the official name of the of this cross-platform version of the framework. But because it's still a framework and it's still a set of APIs and class libraries that you can use to create applications, it's a little confusing. I like to differentiate the two. If I'm using them both in a sentence, I will call it the .NET Core framework versus the full .NET framework. Technically, I think the names are .NET Core and .NET framework.
That's not going to be confusing at all, I'm sure.
Right.
So is .NET the full version going to live on? Is it going to go the way of ASP Classic? And is it certain that .NET Core is going to take over and be sort of the next .NET?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So we're now in officially in the reading tea leaves part of the show. So, you know, I don't know any better than you or anybody listening to this for sure what's going to happen. I think the direction strategically that Microsoft is taking, what you're going to see is less new development going into the .NET framework. It's enormous. It's got a lot in it already. I think you're going to see more focus on .NET Core for new features. So I guess you could argue that that puts us in a similar situation to the Entity Framework versus Link to SQL or even like C# versus VB type of a debate that's happened so many times in this community.
With a C# VB, it's sort of a parallel development, but with Entity Framework Link to SQL, Entity Framework kind of took over.
Exactly. But where you're seeing that right now, I think, is that all the cool new features of ASP.NET in the new version, which is called ASP.NET Core version 1, are only available in the core, version of ASP.NET. There's another version of ASP.NET that came out shortly before that. That's part of Framework 4.6.
Mm-hmm.
But what's kind of interesting is that the ASP.NET core that came out more recently is actually able to target the full .NET framework or the .NET core framework. So I think what you're going to start seeing is the ability to actually target different versions of the framework from different places.
Some more naming questions for you. Hopefully you can clear these up.
Yeah.
DNX. Now, what is that or what was that? And how is it related to .NET core?
Yeah, great question. So right now we're in kind of an unfortunate part of history where if you Google or Bing some of this stuff, you know, you're going to get a lot of old and a lot of new stuff all mixed together because it has been changing and it has changed pretty drastically and quickly. So DNX was the .NET execution environment. The idea of it was basically a command line interface for executing .NET applications cross-platform. Kind of late in the game, the ASP.NET team and the .NET framework team realized that they were both developing different versions of the same thing. And so anyone that followed ASP.NET core's release saw the, I think it was 8 betas and 2 release candidates before it finally released. And the main reason for that last extra release candidate was actually completely rewriting this to kind of merge it in with what the .NET team had done. So they have their own, they call it the .NET CLI command line interface. Of course, this got to be a 3-letter acronym, right? but that CLI for .NET basically replaces this DNX, which was the one that the ASP.NET team had originally created.
Okay, two more. Core FX and Core CLR.
These are very branding kind of names, if you ask me. I'm an engineer by background, so you follow something all the way through its development, and it's got a great name, and then it launches, and the marketing team slaps another name on it that you don't like as much. But these seem very marketing-ish to me. But basically, the Core FX is the core version of the framework. So that would be all the APIs and everything that we're all familiar with, dictionaries and serialization and all those things that we use every day when we're .NET programming, but rewritten for the .NET framework. The core CLR then would be the common language runtime, which actually runs that intermediate language code on different platforms when it's compiled for .NET core.
Okay. Just trying to make some sense out of these names.
Yep.
So don't mean to throw so many at you, but here's a couple more monkey wrenches here.
Yeah.
What about Mono and Xamarin, and how do they relate to the .NET full framework and the .NET core framework?
Sure. So quick background, Xamarin is the company that Microsoft recently bought. It allows you to do .NET and C# code and compile it natively for mobile, so iOS and Android most particularly. And Mono is the open source version of the .NET framework that was actually reverse engineered by the open source community back when Microsoft wasn't helping with that. And that's been around quite a long time now.
Yeah.
So what's kind of funny is that now .NET Core and Mono really have the same mission, if you ask me. But Mono is so heavily embedded into the Xamarin product right now, I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. So you could make the argument that each of those is yet another new flavor of the .NET framework.
Yeah. Yeah, Mono is kind of redundant, or getting redundant now, I'd say.
Yeah, it is. And one hopes that maybe in the future, the whole Xamarin product will be able to take advantage of .NET Core and there'll be some consistency there, but it's going to be a while, I think.
I think you're right. Now, what about the .NET compiler platform, which is also known as Rosalind?
Yeah, so the Rosalind compiler as a service, basically, that was all rewritten just the previous release for Visual Studio 2015, and that stuff is all also available for .NET Core as well.
I didn't know that. That's something I learned today. One more, just for fun here. I might edit this one out because there's only about 10 people using it. But what do you know about the .NET micro framework, and how does that relate to .NET Core?
Yeah, so I actually looked into this a little bit, and I'm not one of the 10 people using it, so I haven't really had a lot of use for it. I know there's a lot of overlap, it seems to me, between the Compact framework and the stuff that's being released now under the Windows IoT name, as far as what they're trying to accomplish. So I'm not sure. I haven't seen anything one way or the other, whether the micro framework is going to be around forever. But I can tell you there's this concept of .NET standard now, which is yet another name that may throw people off a little bit. You know, you may think like, well, there's the .NET core, so .NET standard must be the full .NET framework that we were talking about earlier. But actually, .NET Standard is a, as the name suggests, a standard that allows all these different flavors of the .NET framework to kind of play together nicely with things like NuGet, for example. Right now, if you go to NuGet and you get a package out of there, it tells you what it supports as far as like Silverlight or, you know, Windows 8 or Universal Windows Platform or the Micro framework. All those things are kind of in there separately, and the permutations of those is just off the charts, the number of possibilities. What Microsoft is basically doing is they're kind of organizing all these different versions of the .NET framework under version numbers that they call the .NET standard version. So version 1.0, for example, would support different versions of each of those flavors of the .NET framework. And what it is it's a guarantee that that version of the framework is going to implement certain APIs. So if you released something for a certain version of .NET standard, and then in the future some new device that we can't even imagine now comes out, you know, the Microsoft flying car or something, and that supports a certain version of .NET Standard. If you released a NuGet package that supported that version of .NET Standard in the past, it's going to roll forward and support this new device as long as the APIs line up. That's another way of slicing and dicing all these different API surface areas that we have in these different frameworks.
Does this .NET Standard relate in any way to portable class libraries?
It does, yeah. So in the past, you know, I mentioned NuGet packages as one example of kind of the complexity where this the rubber meets the road for this. The other big one is portable class libraries. So now you're going to be able to say that your code targets a certain version of .NET Standard.
I see.
And now that code will compile against that, regardless of which flavor of .NET is going on underneath the covers. As long as it implements that version of .NET Standard, it'll compile and run.
So generally speaking, how difficult do you think it would be to convert an existing project from .NET framework, let's say ASP.NET website, over to ASP.NET Core? And have you done that yet?
There are some step-by-step blog posts I've seen that Microsoft has made. If you remember way back to the days of classic ASP upgrading to the first version of ASP.NET web forms.
Yeah.
There was an actual wizard at that point that tried to do everything for you. There's nothing like that. Right now, there's people like me who are consultants that you can hire to help. When you get into the code and you look at the code, it's going to all look extremely familiar. Controllers with actions, MVC views, Razor syntax. But there's a bunch of new features on top of that. The actual project structure has been modernized quite a bit to support a lot of client-side frameworks, for example. A lot of JavaScript stuff and package managers like NPM, task runners like Gulp or Grunt. And so these things have actually changed the project structure quite a bit. The project structure is still in flux a little bit between this version 1.01 that we're on right now of .NET Core and the next version, which will probably be 1.1. There's actually, right now, they've abandoned the CSproj file in favor of an xproj and a project.json file. And that's all kind of in flux right now, going back to the CSproj file, basically for MS build support. So that stuff is still in flux for sure. But as far as upgrading goes, the structure is pretty different. But once you get everything in place, the way it works is pretty similar. You also have to think about things like third-party libraries, NuGet packages that may or may not have upgraded to .NET Core at this point, and whether those are available. So there's all those kinds of things to take into account that does make it a little complex at the moment.
So for the listener who's interested in diving deeper into .NET Core and learning more about it, can you recommend any resources for them?
I'm an ASP.NET MVP, so that's kind of my specialty. So if you go to ASP.NET/Core, that's a great resource to get started on that. That'll redirect you to tutorials and blog posts and the documentation, which is also in progress right now.
I'm going to add these links to the show notes. You can find those at crosscuttingconcerns.com. Is there anything else you'd like to plug before we wrap up the show?
Yeah, you were just asking about upgrading projects before. I'm a owner of a consulting company called Trailhead Technology Partners that you mentioned earlier in the show. We'd be happy to help out with that stuff. We also do trainings on ASP.NET Core and .NET Core. If you're interested, you can find us at trailheadtechnology.com.
My guest today has been Jay Tower. Thanks for being on the show.
All right. Thanks, Matt. It's been my pleasure.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves 2016. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. The hosting for this podcast was made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Skype, Audacity, and Camtasia Recorder. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy their music on Amazon or iTunes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on a future episode, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com and submit your name and idea.